Display.
May it please the court, counsel. I'm Jeff Tolan. I represent Lawless Construction, who holds the insurance assets of various De Leon entities. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes. And I'd like to first let the court know we are waiving our issues 4 and 5 related to attorney's fees. The entire issue before the court today will relate to the multifamily endorsement. We believe the significant issue before the court can be addressed as a matter of the clear reading of the policy. But in the event the court disagrees, it's worth 20 seconds to highlight the insurance interpretation rules. One, policy should be interpreted to promote coverage. Two, the courts have said repeatedly that this is particularly clear in the case of a comprehensive general liability policy, which this is. And three, the courts have said repeatedly that exclusion should be narrowly drawn. With that in mind, let's go, if we could, to the exclusion at issue. I've handed up copies of it. The first issue is whether the construction operations here did or did not involve more than 4 entities. And we believe this can be resolved as a matter of the clear reading of the words themselves. When we go through the exclusion, we find that bodily injury or property damage, we have property damage here, arising out of any construction operations, we have construction operations here, that involve a multi-unit residential building, are excluded. So the question is that us or is it not? We go to the definitions and we find that construction operations include repair. Well, this is repair. Are we a multi-unit residential building? We are not. Multi-unit residential building means townhouses, we're a townhouse, that have more than 4 units built or used for purposes of residential occupancy. So we go back and we put that into the definition itself, or into the exclusion itself, and we find that there is an exclusion for property damage arising out of construction operations that touch townhouses with more than 4 units. Our construction operations involved 2 townhouses with a maximum of 4 units. Not more than 4 units, a maximum of 4 units. We don't fault American states for this. An issue with every insurance policy is the effort to capture an infinite panorama of human conduct in a handful of words. And that's what American states has tried to do here. But when you take the definition and apply it to the infinite conduct, there will always be cases such as this one where the court is going to have to address the question, are we on this side of the line or the other side of the line? Here there's no question. Our construction operations did not involve townhouses with more than 4 units. American States makes 2 arguments in response. First, they say, well, the exclusion doesn't address the operations and where they occurred. It just asks, look, did you go do work at a set of buildings that had more than 4 units? And so they would have us believe that if someone went out and did work at 2 units, at a 100-unit complex, the exclusion would apply, or that if someone did work at only 1 unit at a 100-unit complex, the exclusion would apply as long as an additional insured did more work. That is not a fair reading of the exclusion, and it cannot be rewritten to find coverage against us. The word here says construction operations that involve a multi-unit residential building. It does not say operations that are located at a multi-unit residential building. The second argument is that even though we otherwise would have coverage, we lose our coverage because the additional insured worked on other portions of the property too. It's not so. This argument comes out of a line of cases beginning with Unigard versus Spokane School District, where a young elementary kid started a fire in a trash can. The school burned down, and the question was, well, he doesn't have coverage, but his parents, do they or do they not? The exclusion in that policy, like in probably every liability policy at the time, said there is no coverage for intentional actions of the insured. And Division 3 in Unigard wrestled, well, There's no coverage for the intentional act of the insured, the kid, but the parents' acts were not intentional. Do they have coverage or not? And they said, well, sure they do. And in Strong, the Supreme Court here confirmed that. As a result, the relevant portion of insurance policies all over America were rewritten, and the insured was replaced with an insured or any insured, so that the intentional act of any insured now deprives all the insureds of coverage. Here, this clause doesn't refer to an insured, any insured, or the insured, and it comes equipped with a severability provision, which is the second page I've handed up, that tells us that, look, even if the additional insured loses coverage, De Leon doesn't. There's no warning anywhere here that if you went and bought the policy, you might be stripped of coverage you would otherwise have because of work an additional insured had performed. I'd like to move on to the second issue before the court, which is this. Assuming everything I've told your honors is wrong about the exclusion, do we still have coverage? We do. And we do because the exclusion does not apply, this is the green language on the handout, to repair performed for the owner of a detached single-family dwelling, provided that the work does not involve your work that was part of the original contract. Well, it's undisputed that what happened here related to a subsequent repair and not anyone's work that was part of the original contract. So the question is, the two questions needed to trigger this elimination of the exclusion. The questions are these. One, are we an owner or not? And two, is this a detached building or not? We are an owner. The definition of owner here says that an owner means a person or persons that own the individual residential dwelling, but excludes an unincorporated association. We own the dwellings, and the construction contract itself, which begins at Clerk's Papers 341, is signed by every single dwelling owner. There was no unincorporated association here. The CC&Rs didn't create one. There was no separate entity. It didn't have a name. It didn't have a structure. There was no ability of any owner to act for any other owner. The second question needed to trigger this is this a detached single-family dwelling? It's a townhouse. It's legally detached. There's no dispute. It is detached in that there are no common walls, and there's no dispute. There's a one-inch space built between the units, the sole purpose of which was to make sure that no one would ever claim these were condominiums. What they have is a common roof. So are you detached or not with that set of circumstances? As it happens, you're not. When you go to Webster, it's a great place to look. Webster says detached, not sharing any wall with another building. When you go to Wikipedia, it says detached, not sharing any wall. Honest to Pete, it's as if De Leon Construction wrote the definition for the dictionary. So those are our two arguments.
Why does an insurance company care about this? In other words, what is the underlying concern that causes them to say that there's an exclusion if you have a multi-unit residential building? Is it more dangerous or more?
No, it's a great question. It's not in the record, but I've got an opinion which I'll share just based on life. As we all know, being on that side of the bar or on this side, the last 30 years have seen a horrendous amount of litigation involving primarily the skin, but all portions of large condo developments and apartments. It's been a problem particularly in the Northwest where our climate is moisture laden. So what they're doing here, I believe, is trying to get out of that we are not providing any coverage for big things box, and we don't fault that. I don't know this for a fact, but I'm confident that American states will sell you that insurance. They're just going to charge a lot more for it, and that's totally fair. So I believe what we have here is an attempt to draw a line around tiny boxes, charge premiums one way, big boxes, charge them another.
I see.
But
thank
that's
you.
Me on insurance. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Mary DeYoung for the respondent here, American States Insurance Company. We believe the trial court correctly ruled that this multi-unit residential exclusion applied on the face of the language in the exclusion itself. We believe that the exclusion is clear. It states that coverage is eliminated for property damage arising out of any construction operations that involve a multi-unit residential building. There is nothing in this exclusion that limits its application to the situation where the construction work itself touched more than four of the buildings. If the intent of the exclusion had been that, it would have been drafted to say that the exclusion eliminated property damage arising out of any construction operations that involve four or more units at a multi-unit residential building, and it doesn't say that. Instead, the only question really is whether the construction project itself involved a complex that meets the definition of multi-unit residential building. That definition is set forth in the endorsement itself, and our courts have instructed on numerous occasions that when the definition is in the policy, one must respect the definition. The definition here clearly encompasses this townhouse unit, which I don't think anybody disputes includes six townhomes, which is more than four. The definition of multi-unit residential building states that it includes townhouses that have more than four units at the same location or complex, regardless of the number of buildings. And it's that clause, regardless of the number of buildings, that is key to the analysis here. By including this language in the definition, what the policy is making clear is that it's the complex as a whole and not the individual buildings within the complex that is the focus of the exclusion's application. In other words, if property damage arises out of construction operations anywhere at a complex of more than four townhomes, it doesn't matter where within the complex the construction occurred, and in particular, it doesn't matter if the construction only touched a part of the complex. The exception.
Do you share counsel's opinion as to why the insurance policies are written with an attempt to screen out the little boxes from the big boxes, or do you have a different opinion that you'd like
no,
to share with
No, I generally agree with counsel. There has been an explosion of construction defect litigation across the country and in Washington over the last 15 years. And I believe, although this is not in the record, he's correct on that, that this is an attempt to limit coverage to situations where construction involves multi-residential type projects. It includes in the terms here condominiums, townhomes, tract housing developments, apartment buildings, anything like that that's not in essence a single family type of structure. I think the difficulty we have here in part is the fact that the exclusion puts the cutoff at four units, and here we have six, so we're close to the line, and so this seems like it's not a big 100-unit condominium complex, which this exclusion would also apply to. But
if it was a duplex or a triplex, you'd be covered. I mean, they'd be covered.
If there was just a single duplex building, yes, because that would be two,
yeah,
or three, or if this complex
or four.
Involved four, but not six. But lines are drawn all the time in the law, and this line is drawn very clearly here at four, and we have six here. So it is the construction operations here that are that just need to touch the complex as a whole. And because, again, it says that multi-unit residential building is to be construed with reference to the complex as a whole and not the number of buildings, it doesn't matter where the construction was. The exception to that is exception A to the exclusion, and counsel discussed this as well. This was his third issue. Exception A states that the exclusion does not apply where the repair work was performed for the owner of a detached single-family dwelling. The intent of this exception is to allow coverage where, for example, the owner of one of the units were to have here perhaps hired De Leon, which was a tile setter, to do tile work in their kitchen or bathroom. Single unit, work just for them. In that instance, the work would touch just that one unit and the exception would apply. It doesn't apply here because, number one, Deline was not hired by an owner of one of the units, which is what this exception is limited to. DeLeon was hired by Lawless, by the general contractor. He worked for the general contractor, not for the owners. And that was something that was conceded by appellants in the trial court briefing. I would refer you to clerk's papers 52 at line 19. The other reason the exception doesn't apply here is that these duplex townhomes aren't detached single-family dwellings.
Well, I mean, as far as the owner is concerned, he may have done it for Lawless, but who was Lawless doing it for?
Lawless contracted with the group as a whole. The repairs were performed with insurance money that was obtained from a settlement of a prior construction defect claim by the group of owners as a whole, and so it was that group that...
So, I mean, ultimately, he was performing it for the owners.
Yes, but then that gets us into the question of what is an owner, and we have, again, a definition here in the policy of owner. Owner does not involve an unincorporated association. That is exactly what this group was acting as. Mr. Tilden is correct that they weren't incorporated. They weren't set up by the CC&Rs here as a incorporated association. They were, by their nature, unincorporated because they were acting as a group without a legal charter of any type. And so the requirement under the policy of what is an owner is not met because this was an excluded unincorporated
association. Well, it sounds like what you're saying then is that you could only have a single owner, because if you ever had more than one owner, two owners acting together, they would be an unincorporated association and they would be excluded. That can't be the intention of the policy. It's a catch-22.
Well, I think here we have to focus on the facts of this case where all owners were acting together on this.
Yeah.
To use common proceeds. It wasn't two of the owners, for example. Let's say, I don't think these are set up this way, but let's say in one of these duplex units there's a common entryway and the two sides of the unit hired De Leon to tile the entryway. I think that would be different. Here it's the entire group of all owners that acted as an unincorporated association. Clearly these units were attached. They're attached to each other factually. If you look at the buildings, and there are photos in the clerk's papers, they have common siding, they have a common roof, they are attached legally as well. The CC&Rs bind all of the unit owners together as a collective. It imposes restrictions on...
Council suggests that they don't have a common wall and that that's dispositive. Isn't that right? Isn't that his argument?
I think that is misleading. There is a party wall that separates the two sides of the duplex. There is an inch of airspace in between it, but it is a common wall, a common party wall, and that is addressed in the CCRs, has all kinds of restrictions in it as to prohibiting any owner from doing anything to impact the party wall. So they do share a wall. It is a party wall, and it's defined as such. I want to focus in my remaining time here on the question of whether the separation of insureds condition in the policy impacts the analysis. It does not. This exclusion is not phrased so as to be tied to the construction work of any particular insured. It states on its terms that it applies to any construction operations. And here, the construction operations were for, again, the benefit of everyone, and the separation of insureds condition does not import into this language that isn't there. If the intent had been to allow... I'm out of time. Thank you. We believe the trial court was correct and should be affirmed.
Thank you.
I would just like to make a few clarifications if I could. The panel can go almost anywhere to find a litany of the Washington insurance contract interpretation rules, but a great case to start with is Queen City Farms or Boeing versus Aetna. They're quite lengthy. They're all laid out there. Ms. DeYoung's reading of the provisions of the policy, portions of it are reasonable, but our reading's reasonable too, and the law on who gets a jump ball in the circumstances, assuming you find a jump ball, is absolutely clear. Let's go through the issues. Does the construction work have to touch more than four units or not? She says it doesn't. It only has to be performed for a set of buildings that have more than four units. A provision that might apply there would be one that said construction operations that are located at a multi-unit residential building. This provision says operations that involve one. And that, to me, says you've got construction work being performed at more than four units to trigger this exclusion. Is it detached or not? The drawings are at Clerk's Papers 229, and Mr. Gallaudet's declaration at 223 addresses this directly. They are not... There's no common wall, as you and I would understand the word. These are freestanding buildings. They have 2x4s coming up to within 1 inch of each other. There is a 1 inch airspace, and the property line goes directly down the middle of the airspace. You ask, what is the goal of that?
Isn't the siding continuous?
Yes, as is the roof, but no question. But when you go to Wikipedia, it's 2013, or to Webster's, it says sharing no interior wall. I'm done. Thank you.
Safeco.
It's common wall, actually.
Safeco and Miller.